Hello everyone, and thank you for coming. I'm Neil Mehta from the Michigan Animal Rights Society, and if you're interested in being added to our listserv, we'll have a sign-up sheet in the table in the back after the talk. This talk is also co-sponsored by the Student Animal Legal Defense Fund and by the Edward Ginsberg Center for Community Service and Learning. This evening, I have the honor of introducing our guest speaker, Mr. Howard Lyman. Mr. Lyman is the president of Voice for Revival Future, a nonprofit educational organization promoting organic family farming, biodiversity, vegetarianism, environmentally friendly practices, and enlightened trade. He has also served as a president of EarthSave International and president of the International Vegetarian Union. In addition, he has served as the director of the Humane Society of the United States Eating with Conscience campaign, and before that spent 5 years lobbying for the National Farmers Union in Washington, D.C. I first heard Mr. Lyman speak at the Student Animal Rights Conference 3 years ago in Washington, and I was captivated by his story. Here is a man of impeccable integrity who possessed so much courage to rethink what his entire life had been about and who made a significant change. You probably know Howard Lyman as a vegetarian activist who caused Oprah Winfrey to stop eating hamburgers and who, along with Oprah, was sued by Texas cattle ranchers. When I first heard him speak, I was inspired by his courage, his vision, and his common sense. I'm so glad you were all able to come tonight and hear Mr. Lyman speak about our food choices and their impact on the environment and our health. Let me briefly mention that Howard will be selling copies of his book, No More Bull, and copies of his DVD, Mad Cowboy, also at the table in the back after the talk. Without further ado, please join me in giving a warm welcome to Mr. Howard Lyman.
Thank you very much. You should never applaud for somebody until you hear what they have to say. Impossible to get it back. My name is Howard Lyman. I'm a fourth generation farmer, rancher, feedlot operator from Montana. I travel around the world about 100,000 miles a year, about 300 days a year, and I talk to people about the proper amount of animal products to have in their diet as being zero. And people look at me and say, wait a minute, fourth generation farmer, rancher, feedlot operator talking about not eating animal products must be smoking the number one cash crop out of Michigan. It's probably the only test for the Supreme Court that I can pass. But what I want to talk to you tonight about is the fact that we are going towards a cliff at 200 miles an hour. The government and the bureaucrats are talking to the people and they're basically saying, do not worry about it, that when you go over the cliff, at the bottom of the cliff, we will have the best support mechanism in the world to help you. We will send FEMA. Well, I'm telling you that I think what we ought to do is change the road. And so what I want to do tonight is I want to talk to you about the famous German philosopher Goethe. He said, we hide everything in plain sight. As we're sitting here tonight, there are over 6 billion people on the planet. There are twice as many people here today as the day I was born. And if I live to the age I aspire to, that number will double again. Can you imagine that there will be 4 times more people on the planet the day I die as the day I was born? Of the 6 billion people that we have, 1.25 billion are going to bed hungry. 1.25 billion are going to bed overweight and obese. We are actually talking about the survival of this species. But for the most part, people are looking at it like it doesn't make any difference, that the most important thing in the world is the price of gas. Do you realize that we're spending anywhere from $30 to $60 billion to import $20 billion worth of oil from the Middle East? Ask yourself, if we were spending $30 to $60 billion for wind power, solar power, education, health care. Can you imagine what it would be like in this nation? But instead of that, we are dumping our treasury in the Middle East. And the last time I looked over there, if what's going on is not a civil war, I've never seen a civil war in my life. So I want you to sit back and relax. I want to tell you the story of how somebody that came from Montana, that spent 45 years of my life in animal production, happens to be traveling around the world now talking about not eating animal products. I was raised in Montana during the Second World War. My parents could not hire help. We had the largest dairy farm in the state of Montana, and so both my mother and father were milking cows. That meant my brother, two sisters, and I were raised by my grandparents. Now, back then, daycare is considerably different than it is today. No such thing as swing slides or Lego blocks. Back then, daycare was working in the garden. My first job, 4 or 5 years old, was working in the garden, and I thought it was the Garden of Eden. We had birds, trees, and living soil. It was the most wonderful thing in the world. I thought that it was the thing that I wanted to do the rest of my life. I wanted to be a farmer. Now, my parents had a farm, which meant that I could go to school. 12 years I went to school, I did nothing but party and play football. I guarantee you I never missed a party, I never missed a football game, and I never took a book home. And believe it or not, my senior year they came to me and they said, Lyman, you are going to graduate. I almost had the big one right there. I couldn't hardly believe it. And if you think I had trouble believing it, can you imagine what it was like for my instructors? Oh my God, Lyman's going to graduate. But I figured that out. They looked at it and they said, no dumber or no smarter than this guy is. We better graduate him or he may come back. And so I graduated. I was thrilled to death. I was going to go home to that farm and become a farmer. I went to that farm and I found that that farm was a business to be run. I didn't have the tools to run a business. I was dumber than a post. I didn't let that bother me any. I did what most good red-blooded American youth, 12 years of school and didn't learn anything. I immediately went on to the university. I went to Montana State University. I wanted to be an agribusinessman. I couldn't spell agribusiness, but I knew that's what I wanted to be. I learned about herbicides, pesticides, hormones, and medication. I soaked that up like a sponge because I wanted to be an agribusinessman, and I learned the thing that was called better living through chemistry. And I bought that hook, line, and sinker. I got a degree in agriculture, and I went home to my father, and I said to my father, I said, move over, Pop. I'm going to turn this one-horse farm into an agribusiness. And he looked at me and he said, what in the world is that? I said, man, didn't you ever hear about better living through chemistry? He said, our job is to work with nature. I said, no, that's old-fashioned. Our job is to feed a hungry world. And to do that, the way we're going to do it is with chemicals. Step over, I'm going to show you how this is done. I took that organic farm and in a number of years, I turned it into an operation where I had 7,000 head of cattle. 12,000 acres of crop, 30 employees. I'm telling you what a thrill it was the first time I wrote a check for $1 million and it didn't bounce and I thought, oh my God, I have arrived. I'm the Donald Trump of agriculture. And just when I was on top of the world, 1979, I got a wake-up call. I ended up paralyzed from the waist down. The doctor told me, he said, you have a tumor on your spinal cord. He said, if that tumor is on the inside of the cord, you have less than one chance in a million you'll ever walk again. Somebody gives you the odds of one in a million. What they're saying to you is, hey, sucker, pick out the wheelchair you like because you're going to be in it the rest of your life. And there I am in the hospital, flat on my back. A lot of things going through my mind. Why I became a farmer? Birds, trees, living soil. I was buying over $100,000 worth of chemicals a year. I watched the birds die, the trees die. I saw the soil change. And the first time I was willing to admit myself that I was part of the problem and not the solution is when I was flat on my back in the hospital. And it was not about having seven combines at $100,000 a piece or 20 tractors or 30 trucks. And I wondered, odds in one in a million, I'd probably be in a wheelchair. What kind of an invalid was I going to be? Was I going to be in a wheelchair feeling sorry for myself, or could I actually make my life amount to something? Could I do something worthwhile? I made up my mind that night that whether I was in a wheelchair or not, I'd spend the rest of my life trying to get back to where we were with birds, trees, and living soil. They took me up and operated on me for 12 hours. I stand in front of you tonight. I have no bone on the back of my spinal cord. After they took the bone off, sure enough, the tumor was on the inside of the cord. They split the cover on the cord. Not only was it inside the cord, it was under the cord. They could not lift the cord up to get to the tumor. They picked a nerve. They cut it. They took out a tumor the size of my thumb. I walked out of the hospital with a one in a million operation. But I walked out a very different individual than I walked in. And I thought, you know, I said to my doctor, I said, what caused that tumor? And he said, well, they were adolescent cells stimulated to grow, probably by the chemicals you were using on the farm. And I thought, man, this is simple. What we'll do is become organic farmers. From the time I was paralyzed until I could get back to operating my farm, 7,000 head of cattle, 30 employees, I don't need to tell you what the financial shape of my farm was. And so I went and saw my banker, and I said to my banker, I need your help. We need to start farming with nature. My banker, he reared back in the chair, and he looked at me, and he said, what in the world does that mean? I said, we need to become organic farmers. And he looked at me, and he laughed, and he says, you want me to lend you money? And you're not going to spend it with my other customers, the chemical dealer, the pharmaceutical dealer, the fertilizer dealer? He said, there will never be a day like that. And so 1983, I sold my farm. I paid my debts. But I kept working with other farmers not to make the mistakes that I made. Well, I got a call. They called me up and they said, how would you like to go to Washington, D.C. and work on Capitol Hill? I can remember looking up and saying, oh, thank you, Lord. 535 members of Congress, I just absolutely knew they wanted to do what was right. I went to Washington, D.C. I learned a thing that was called the Golden Rule. Them that got the gold make the rules. And I said to my friends, I said, this game is rigged. We will never win here in Washington, D.C. And my friends, they looked at me and they laughed. And they said, what are you going to do? Go talk to the people? And I said, yeah. And they said, you know, you're never going to get half of the people to do anything. I said, we don't need half. 80% of the people are brain dead. They're part of the herd. They follow nose to tail. And when you follow nose to tail, there is only one thing you ever see in front of you. Our job is not to try to educate Joe Sixpack. Our job is to go and educate the 20% of the people that are still thinking. And so I traveled around and I started talking to people about how our diet affects what we are doing. Remember, I was one of the first 300-pound football players in North America. And when I was playing football, I never found an animal product I wouldn't stuff down my throat because I thought I needed the protein, the iron, to go out on the field and knock the other guy down. And when I quit playing football, I kept eating the same way, and I got well over 300 pounds. My blood pressure was sky high. My cholesterol was over 300. I'd sit down and have lunch, and my nose would bleed. Remember, I was from Montana. I'd rather be caught riding a stolen horse than admitting I was thinking about becoming a vegetarian. But I figured out how to do that. I became a closet vegetarian. I didn't tell anybody. My diet mainly consisted of lettuce and dairy products, and for 1 year, that was my diet. I lost some weight. My blood pressure came down slightly. My cholesterol came down slightly, and I thought, wow, if I can do that, being the world's worst vegetarian, just think what I could do if I became vegan. and I could spell vegan. I became a vegan. I lost 135 pounds. My blood pressure went from sky high to normal. My cholesterol from 300 to 135. I thought I'd found the golden nut. I couldn't hardly wait to share it with my friends, my family. My wife and I have been married over 35 years. In 35 years, she came with a mother that has been a severe test. And I was thinking of telling my mother-in-law about my diet, even though it had the potential to extend her life. I thought about that for a long, long time. But I thought it was the right thing to do, and I picked up the phone and I called my mother-in-law and I said, "Hey, Marge, I'd like to tell you about my new diet." And over the phone, I heard it go click. I can distinctly remember looking up and saying, "Thank you, Lord." But I thought it was probably too direct of an approach, and so I called her back and I said, "Marge, why don't you and Ralph come to our house for Thanksgiving dinner?" She said to me, "Ha, you won't have turkey." I said, "I'll tell you what, if you come to our house on Thanksgiving, I guarantee you we'll have turkey." She agreed to come. She knew she had me eating crow. Thanksgiving Day, my mother-in-law came in the house like a rocket. Immediately to the oven. She jerked open the oven. No turkey. She looked in the refrigerator. No turkey. She even looked in the dryer. No turkey. And she said to me, "You guaranteed we'd have turkey." I took my mother-in-law by the hand. Fortunately, I was wearing my gloves. I took her to the back door, and in the backyard, I had a live turkey. I gave my mother-in-law an axe. Not a real good idea to give your mother-in-law an axe. And I told her, I said, "If you want that turkey, you got to kill it." Now, this story has got good news and bad news. The good news is that turkey is still alive. The bad news, so is my mother-in-law. But I learned something, that when you point at somebody and you say, "Let me tell you what you ought to do," you can see their eyes roll up. You can hear their ears slam shut. People do not want to be told what they should do. You have to realize that when you point at them, you have one finger pointed at them and three back at you. Is it important that we change? Look at America today. One out of every two Americans dying today is dying of heart disease. One out of three have cancer. One out of four is dying of cancer. Six out of every 10 Americans are either overweight or obese. And what are we doing? We are digging more graves with our fork than any other tool. And so, if there is going to be hope for the Homo sapien species, the change has to happen in this generation. And whether we're talking about health, whether we're talking about the environment, or whether we're talking about the 10 billion animals that are killed every year for food, remember, we're killing the animals, but the animals are killing us. So here I am. I'm traveling around and I'm talking to people about changing their diet. My hometown newspaper, the Great Falls Tribune, puts my picture in the front page. And they said, "Montana's most famous vegetarian." I pick up the phone, I call them up, and I said, "Why don't you tell it the way it is? Montana's only vegetarian." And they said, "Oh no, we got one of you guys here at the newspaper, so we know there are two." But when you look at what is happening, it is no longer a laughing matter. Can you imagine right now, there are 4.5 million Americans being diagnosed as having Alzheimer's? Even though in 1900, the number of cases of Alzheimer's you could count on one hand. Alzheimer's, when they did a study in Pittsburgh Veterans Hospital, they found that people that died being diagnosed with Alzheimer's, took their brain out, looked at them under the microscope. The only way you can tell They found that 5.5% of them really had the human form of mad cow disease, Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease. They did the same study in Yale University and they found 13% misdiagnosed. Well, I've been traveling around since 1990 talking to people about mad cow disease, a disease that incubates anywhere from 10 to 40 years, that eats holes in the brain, that is 100% fatal. And at that time, when people heard me talk about mad cow disease, they thought I was the one that had holes in my brain. 1996, I was in England. I was there to testify in the McLibel trial. And believe it or not, the Minister of Health stood in front of Parliament and said, "We no longer can assure the English people that mad cow disease cannot be transferred from animals to humans." I ended up doing 70 press conferences in 9 days. I remember that the hotel I was staying in, they took the breakfast room, turned it into a press gallery. I set up the cameras. I did an interview with Italian television, French television. Got into the car that they sent over from BBC to take me down to do World Service Tonight. I'll never forget, I walked out of my hotel and here's this big limousine waiting for me. A guy jumps out of the limousine and he opens the door for me. I'm a farm boy and I looked at him and I said, "If you ever do that again, I will break your arm." He took me down to BBC television. I'm talking to the producer and I said to him, "How many stations is this on?" He said, "Well, I really don't know, but we are in 200 countries. Oh my God. I went over a farm boy. I was coming back a celebrity. After I did BBC radio, my limo was waiting for me. I was to go and do BBC television. I went out. Needless to say, my driver did not open the door for me. I got in, I went to BBC television, it was directly across the street, we did a U-turn. I said to the guy, I said, "Hell, I could have walked over here." After that, he took me back to my hotel, I'd had 7 newspapers waiting to interview me. Well, after 9 days in England, 70 press events, I came back to the United States. I'm walking down the runway at JFK Airport and over the loudspeaker I heard Howard Lyman pick up a white paging telephone. Well, being a celebrity, I looked to my entourage. I was alone. I picked up the phone, it was Oprah Winfrey. Oprah said, "How would you like to come to Chicago, appear on television? We want to do a program that is called Dangerous Food. Could it happen here? In front of a few million people. Do you think, being a celebrity, that I jumped at the opportunity to appear in front of a few million people?" I waited a good 4 or 5 seconds before I agreed. She sent me a ticket. I flew to Chicago. I got off of the plane. I'm walking down the runway carrying my suit, and here's a guy in a blue suit and a limo driver's hat, and he's got a big sign, and the sign says, "Lyman." I said to him, "Can you wait 10 minutes? I'd like to find somebody with a camera. I'd like to get a picture of this." He said, "No." Took me out and put me in a limo, and I swear this is true. That limo was so long, I had a phone to talk to the driver. Wow. They'd seen me in Montana. Luckily, the windows were frosted. Nobody could see in. They took me down, put me in a suite in a hotel that was larger than the home I was raised in with my parents, 2 sisters and a brother. Next morning, I'm up bright and early. I got my suit on. I go down. My limo is waiting for me. I go and I meet Oprah Winfrey for the first time. I walk in the door. Oprah comes up to me and says, "You know, I saw the movie Babe 5 times. I will never again eat pork." And I looked up and thought, "Oh, Lord, it's going to be a great day." I go into the green room. I'm in the green room, and every one of you guys that's here, if you're going to go on national television in front of a few million people, it's your wife's responsibility to call you up and tell you exactly what to say. I'm in the green room. The phone rings. It's my wife. She tells me what to say. I'm thinking about that. They come and get me, take me out and put me on the stage. To the right of me is a grandmother from England whose granddaughter's dying of the human form of mad cow disease. To the left of me is a guy from the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. What's going through my mind is what my wife told me. She said, remember, don't say anything stupid. Now, I'm sitting there trying to figure out if there's a comma in that sentence or not. But before I can figure that out comes Oprah Winfrey. She looks at me and points and says, here's a man who believes within 10 years we could have a disease that would make AIDS look like the common cold. And I said, absolutely. She said, that's a strong statement. I said, Oprah, we have 100,000 cows a year, fine at night, dead in the morning. We round them up, grind them up, turn them into feed. We feed them back to other cows. We go out and scrape up roadkill, deer, elk, possum, raccoons, and we're feeding those back to cows. And then we take euthanized pets, dogs and cats, full of chemicals that were used to kill them. The city of Los Angeles alone, 200 tons of dogs and cats a month are ground up, turned into feed, and fed back to our pets or our food animals. I look over. Oprah's eyes are as big as saucers. I know I got her. Oprah turns around and looks at the guy from the National Cattlemen's Beef Association, and she said, Dr. Weber, are we feeding cows to cows? I'll never forget what he had to say. He said, well, you know, there's a limited amount of that going on. Near as I could tell, about 95% of the cattle in factory feedlots are eating the remains of other animals, and then the next thing out of Oprah's mouth gets us sued. She said, that just stops me cold. I will never again eat a burger. Now, she didn't say to the millions of viewers, you shouldn't eat a burger. She didn't say she thought the meat was infected. She just said, that stops me cold. I will never again eat a burger. Now, I knew when I went on that show that 13 states had a thing called the food disparagement law. A food disparagement law says that you cannot say something you know to be false about a perishable commodity. I never said anything I thought was false. I told the truth. Well, we were taping the show. Took a couple of hours when we got done taping it. I walked up to Oprah when it was over and I said to her, I said, hey, Oprah, give me 10 minutes. I'll get you off of chicken. And Oprah looked at me and said, only one animal a day. Well, I thought, you know, what I said was the truth. I'm sure not going to get in trouble for telling the truth. I went about my business. A few weeks later, I got a phone call. It was a national news magazine. They called me up and they said, do you realize that you're being sued along with Oprah Winfrey and Harpo Production by a group of Texas cattlemen? I said, can I put you on hold? I put them on hold. I raced into my library. I inventoried my vegetarian cookbooks. I knew those cattlemen wanted those vegetarian cookbooks bad. I went back and said, I can't talk to you now. I need to put in a call to Oprah. I called Oprah and I told her, I said, Oprah, we lose this suit. You got to put up the money. I'm throwing in my vegetarian cookbooks. It was an amazing thing. USDA and FDA did exactly what I called for. They banned the feeding of cows, sheep, and goats back to cows, sheep, and goats. So I thought we would go to Amarillo, Texas. The judge, a 72-year-old lady, a tough old heifer, I thought, sure, she would dismiss the case. I go to Amarillo, Texas. I don't know if you've ever been there. It's not the end of the world, but it's clearly visible from there. If you're going to give the world an enema, you send the hose to Amarillo. We get down there. The largest employer in Amarillo is a slaughter facility killing cows. Bumper stickers all over town said the only mad cow in Texas is named Oprah. I knew we were in trouble, and I said to my lawyer, we need a change of venue. We went to that sweet little old judge and said, Your Honor, we'd like a change of venue. She picked up the hammer, slapped it down, and said, motion denied. Bring in the jury pool. 140 people came into the courtroom. You never saw so many hats, boots, and belt buckles in all your life. I leaned over and said, we better write the appeal today. We're never going to win here. At the end of the day, we had 12 jurors absolutely steeped in the cattle culture. I'm talking to my lawyer. My lawyer said to me, he said, the cattlemen are going to call you to the stand. The first question they're going to ask you, is it not true that you are a vegetarian? I said, I can handle that. He said, you damn well better or we're going to lose. So needless to say, they call me to the stand. The plaintiff's attorney is looking at the jury, laughing and snickering, and he says, Mr. Lyman, I can't hardly say it. Is it not true that you are a vegetarian? I looked at the jury and said, I will not apologize for that that has saved my life. And never again did we talk about me being a vegetarian. But they asked me every question you can imagine. I'll never forget, the plaintiff's attorney looked at me and said, Mr. Lyman, has anybody ever called you irresponsible? I said, yes. My lawyer sitting over there going, no, no, no. Now the plaintiff's attorney thinks he's found the key to the Gordian knot, and he looks at me and he says, who? I said, my wife. And the jury's over there going, been there, done that. Well, we're in that courtroom for 6 weeks. That jury comes back and finds Oprah Harpo production of myself not liable. The cattleman cannot believe that. They immediately appeal it to the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals. We're in the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals for over a year, and they come back with a unanimous panel decision that Oprah Harpo production and myself are not liable. And then in their opinion, they said everything that Lyman said on the show was true, and the truth is not actionable. The cattleman asked for a rehearing. It was denied. And then they turned around and sued us in state court. Not being from Texas, I moved it from state court to federal court. Oprah gets on that train. We go right back in front of the federal judge that we spent 6 weeks in her courtroom. And after 6 years, hundreds of thousands of dollars in legal fees, that judge throws out the case with prejudice, which meant it could not be refiled. The statute of limitations had run out. And after 6 years, hundreds of thousands of dollars of my own money, we ended up finding that the right of free speech is not free. But just stop and think about it. Do you think they sued Oprah Harpo production and myself because of what we said? Or did they sue us because they wanted to show every other media outlet that if you take this issue and put it in front of the American people, even though it's true, we are willing to spend millions of dollars suing you? Ask yourself this question. Are we going to survive as a species in the direction we're going? Never in the history of the world have there ever been fewer resources with a greater number of people than there are today. 1999, they did a study that said we were using 20% more resources every year than what we were replacing. 1850, they took a picture of a church in Iowa. They built a brand new church. All of the farm ground around the church was farmed. They took a picture of it, put it up on the wall, and that church in Iowa has been in continuous use for 155 years. At 155 years, they took another picture, put it up, and lo and behold, all of the land around that church was still farmed. But the big difference was the farmland was 10 feet lower than it was 155 years ago. When the boat people came to North America about 300 years ago, we had the deepest, richest topsoil of any continent on the face of the earth. In less than 300 years, we have lost 75% of all the topsoil that was here when the boat people landed. It takes 500 years to produce 1 inch of topsoil. We haven't been here long enough to produce an inch of topsoil, and we've lost 3/4 of what we have. If we talk about trees, never have we had fewer mature trees than we have today. Never in the history of the world have we had fewer fish than what we have today. The list goes on and on. It's about time that we understand what the famous German philosopher Goethe said, that we hide everything in plain sight. Are we focusing on the future of our children and grandchildren, or are we being indoctrinated with the Joseph Goebbels PR school that says, find the biggest lie you can find, tell it often enough, and people will believe it? I'm here to tell you tonight that every time you reach into your pocket, every time you take out a dollar, you're voting on the future. What kind of a future do you want? Are you going to sit around and allow this planet to be cannibalized to the point where our children and grandchildren cannot survive? Look at what happened in Easter Island. Easter Island was a beautiful paradise. It had deep, rich topsoil. It had trees, had fish, had everything they needed for that society, and they ended up there where the stature of the society was how big of a monument you could carve and move down to the beach and stand up. And so the stone monuments got bigger and bigger, and they cut down more trees and more trees. And while this was happening, there were some stowaways that came to the island, and nobody paid any attention to them because they were not eating the human food. And so all of these rats that came were living on the palm nuts from the trees. And they were cutting down the trees, and lo and behold, they all stopped and looked and said, "Wow, there are no new trees growing." But it was so important to have the stature that they continued to cut down the few remaining trees and move the rock monuments down on the beach. And all of a sudden, there were no more trees. And without the trees, they could not build boats. Without boats, they could not get the fish. They exhausted the soil, and the people in Easter Island became cannibals. And today we can go to Easter Island and the big monuments are there, but the people are gone. At the same time, exactly the same thing was happening in Taikopan, except there the status symbol was how many pigs that you had. And the elders got together and looked at it and said, "You know, those pigs are destroying our environment." And even though the status symbol was how many pigs that you had, they ended up eliminating all of the pigs. They ended up limiting the growth of the population. And as we sit here tonight, that group of people in Taikopan are still a vibrant society because they learned how to live within their environment. 1943, we had a detachment of soldiers on St. Matthew's Island up in the Bering Strait. They were worried about the small detachment that they might not be able to supply them with food, and so they moved in 27 head of reindeer so that if all else failed, that they could go out and harvest the reindeer and have something to eat. Well, it was not necessary. 1945, they moved the military detachment off. Those 27 reindeer in 20 years increased to where there were 6,000 fat, sleek reindeer because there were no natural predators there, and the reindeer exploded in population to the point that they ate the island into oblivion. 20 years from the time they were started, there were 6,000. 22 years, there were 60. 24 years, there were zero. We always end up, when we end up with the growth in an environment to the point that it overgrows, collapses. It did it in Easter Island. It did it on St. Matthew's Island. It happened with the Mayans. It happened with the ancient ones in the Southwest. In almost every one of those cases, those people, their only food supply was eating their neighbors. How long are we going to continue to go down the path that we are on right now? A friend of mine took me to the forest in British Columbia. There was a big sign, and the sign said, "Welcome to the forest." And for an area that was larger than the state of Rhode Island, there was not one living tree. That it had been clear-cut for an area larger in the state of Rhode Island, and they did not even have the common courtesy of cutting down the sign that says, "Welcome to the forest." It is happening around us right now. When the explorers came to the Americas, they talked about the great school of fish on the George's Bank and the Grand Banks, and they were so numerous, they talked about the fact that they thought their ships would run aground, that they could just absolutely scoop them out of the ocean. Today, the shipping fleets sit high and dry because we have absolutely destroyed all of the fish on the George's Banks and the Grand Banks. This goes on and on, no matter where it is that you want to look at it. If we look at Jeremy Rifkin, and he wrote a book, and he was writing about, for every hamburger that comes out of the rainforest, it takes 55 square feet of rainforest to produce a hamburger. They did a study that they showed that the ocean forming the clouds and the royal clouds coming in over the rainforest, that only 25% of the water that fell on the rainforest flowed back to the ocean. The other 75% was transpired by the trees back into the clouds that moved further inland. Today, we're cutting the rainforest using the trees 300-400 years old for doing nothing more than melting pig iron. When in God's world are we going to wake up to what's happening around us? Do you realize as we sit here today that 1/3 of all of the people in China dying today are dying from the air they breathe and the water they drink? It's about time that we get serious about the future. Now, there's nobody in the world that is more optimistic than I am. And the reason is because I believe the only thing that ever changes human behavior is crisis. We have a crisis. The crisis is not about bringing oil from the Middle East. The fact of it is we have three states, North Dakota, Kansas, and Texas, have enough wind power to provide all of the electricity for the United States of America. 1980, it cost 38 cents a kilowatt hour to produce wind power. Today, it costs 4 cents per kilowatt hour, and they believe within 4 years it'll be down to 2 cents. Can you imagine what we could do if we took that $30 to $60 billion that we're investing in importing $20 billion worth of oil and went out and worked on our problems, our natural resources? I came from Montana. We have Glacier Park. When I was a kid and I went there 50 years ago, we had massive glaciers. Today, those glaciers are almost gone, and they are predicting that within my lifetime, there will be no glaciers left in Glacier Park. We are melting the ice cap. If we end up melting the ice sheet on Greenland, it will raise the ocean level 31 feet. If it comes up 1 meter, it will put a city the size of Shanghai, China, underwater with 9 million people. These are the things that are happening right now. It's not about having a lakeshore property. It's not about a big car. It's not about a fancy job. It's about the future of our children and grandchildren. Here you are, one of the great learning institutions of the world, the University of Michigan. What are you going to do with your education? Are you going to go out and see how much money you can make? Are you going to become part of the problem, or are you willing to commit yourself to be part of the solution? The state of Michigan right now is an economic basket case. What better place to take the turnaround that needs to be done than right here in Michigan? Where is a better place to get the brain power to come up with a plan to make that happen than right here at this university? This is the most exciting time to live in human history is right now, because we're going to determine whether there is a future for our children and grandchildren or not. Africa today, the average age of Africans is 55 years of age. Russia, the longevity is not going up, it's going down. China, 1 out of 3 people dying from the air they breathe and the water they drink. But the amazing thing about it, China has looked at it and said, you know, a living tree is worth 3 times more than cutting down the tree for the lumber. And so now they have banned cutting trees in China. They would rather import them from Indonesia or somewhere else, because they know the future without trees, the Gobi Desert is going to engulf the majority of China. If China ends up consuming the same amount of animal products that they are right now, if they continue on the trend that they're on, by the year 2020, China will need to import more grain to raise livestock than all of the grain that is exported today from all countries to all countries. And remember, we will end up with over 10 billion people. How are we going to feed hungry people? The United States of America, 80% of all of the grain that is raised in America today is stuffed down the throat of an animal. It takes 16 pounds of grain to put a pound of beef on your table. 16 pounds of grain will feed 32 people or one Rush Limbaugh. Which is the best use of our resources? Now, I have people say to me, wait a minute, feeding meat to Rush might not be a bad idea. May shorten his life. I'm not sure that that's the correct approach, but it is an interesting thought. It is not what we know that's important. It's what we know that isn't so. That's what's important. And the fact of it is that most of the things that we were taught growing up, the food pyramid, you know, protein, you need your protein. Do you realize that if I gave you in here today for the rest of your life nothing other than a bowl of brown rice with enough calories for your lifestyle, you would get twice as much protein as what you need? It is impossible to be protein deficient if you have enough calories for your lifestyle. The World Health Organization says that the proper amount of protein in your diet should be 5% of your calories should come from protein. Mother's breast milk, the most perfect food for Homo sapiens, has 4.5% protein. The standard American diet has between 25 and 40% of their calories coming from protein. Osteoporosis comes from too much protein in our diet. And so I say to you today, stop and take a look at where we're going. The book I wrote that we have here tonight, which is called No More Bull, is about diets. Good diets, bad diets. There's a lot of lousy vegetarian and vegan diets. There are a lot of health food diets like the Zone diet, the Atkins diet. Can you believe that Dr. Atkins said that he was on his diet for 25 years? He fell down. They say he hit his head. I think he probably had a stroke. They did an autopsy when he died, and they found that he was obese. 25 years on his diet, and he was obese. That he had a heart attack. That his circulatory system was occluded. It's about time that we take a look at the difference between good diets and bad diets. And so I wrote a book about bad diets. I wrote a book about good diets, and then I included 100 vegan recipes. So when somebody says to you, but if I do this, what am I going to eat? We have 100 recipes from the best vegan chefs in North America. And when somebody says to me, what in the world are you doing? What do you eat? Twigs and nuts? I'm able to give them the book and no, I sell them the damn book. Authors should not give books away. But what we need is for people to understand that what we know about diets today, in the most part, is more detrimental than it is good. And our government is just like that. We have the best government that money can buy. USDA and FDA are absolutely in the back pocket of the big multinational corporations. They don't give a damn about anything except making money. And if we're going to do something about it, it's not going to be in Washington, D.C. It's going to be right here at the grassroots, and it's going to be with people like you. When somebody walks up to you and taps you on the shoulder and says, are you one of the V people? You have a 35-second window of opportunity of telling them why. It's a 35-second window, not a 3.5-hour monologue. I just went to my wife's 50th class reunion in Great Falls, Montana. My wife and I walked in the door weighing exactly the same we did when we graduated 50 years ago. One-third of her class has already died. You never saw so many canes, crutches, and walkers in your life, and people are standing around talking about their latest operation, their favorite doctor, and where they could get the cheapest meds. But nobody wanted to talk to me about my diet until I went to the bathroom. I walk into the bathroom and some clown comes up to me and said, do you ever sneak out and get a burger? Do you ever go to McDonald's? Now, what do you say to somebody in the bathroom to educate them about diet? I looked at him and I looked him right in the eye and I said, by the way, does your poop float? Never, never pass up an opportunity of educating somebody, no matter where it is. But you've probably heard more of what I have to say than you can stand right now. And what I'd like to do right now is I'd like to open it up for questions. I will take questions as long as you want to ask. Is that we are a visual society. It's not what we say that educates people, it's about what we do. And they say, you know, for somebody to learn something new, they have to be approached with something anywhere from 7 to 9 different times. You never know whether you're talking to somebody the first time or the 9th time. So remember, what's really beneficial to you is to know right up here when somebody says, why in the world should I eat like you? And you can basically look at them and say, you realize that vegans will live anywhere from 7 to 15 years longer than people eating the standard American diet? The studies out there show that to be true. Now, you can go and talk about buying organic food and somebody will say to you, well, but it's more expensive. What's expensive? Buying food that's good for your body or paying to try to keep yourself alive. We have the best health care in the world to keep you alive until you run out of money. Is that the way to live? Do you realize that the human body was designed to last 120 years? How many of us know somebody that's 120 years old? Now, the cattlemen say that the only reason that vegetarians live longer, that they're more miserable, they just think it's longer. But the fact of it is that study after study shows that the more animal products in your diet, the shorter your life will be. There's a great book that I recommend is Dr. T. Colin Campbell's book on the largest dietary study in the world. It was called The China Project. It's a wonderful book that shows that when we talk about cancer, dairy products, 87% of the protein in dairy products is a thing called casein. Casein is like throwing gasoline on a fire for the growth of cancer. They could actually take animals that had cancerous tumors and they could grow the tumor with casein. They could shrink it by removing the casein. And we're wondering right now why 1 out of every 3 Americans has cancer, 1 out of 4 is dying of cancer. It is because of our actual overindulgence in animal protein. So anyway, what I'd like to do now is I'd like to open it up for questions. Now, I will tell you that I am about half tractor deaf. And so you raise your hand, I will come back, get the question, I'll repeat it for the audience, and then we'll see, we'll go as long as you would like. Remember that there are books and DVDs available in the back of the room. Are there any questions?
Well, first, about 7 years ago, I want to mention I actually met you in a bathroom.
Where is this going on?
In Boulder. American Vegan Society.
Okay, that's enough about that. Okay.
Yeah. Well, actually, just last night I watched The Future of Food, which talks about GMOs and things like that. And the more I read, it almost seems as if we're kind of like lost the game already. It feels like we're defeated, like there's no hope of getting back. Do you feel that there is, that we still can recover?
Question is, are we so far down the line that we cannot recover? Absolutely not. Remember, the only thing that changes human behavior is crisis. Most people don't realize what crises are out there. Mad cow disease, dementia. Now we're talking about the bird flu. Do you realize that our government is saying to the American people that when the bird flu becomes transmissible from human to human, that we will lose about 150 million Americans? That's one out of every two Americans is what our government is prognosticating. Do I think it's too late? Absolutely not. You know, look at the Titanic. How little change it would have had to been to miss the iceberg. But the first thing you have to do is understand there's an iceberg out there. You have to look at the fact that even if you hit the iceberg, just think what would have happened if they'd actually loaded the lifeboats with the people that were there. Half of the boats on the Titanic moved away with less than half of the people that they would hold. There was another boat less than 15 miles away that they could have taken a boat over to those other ships and came and saved the people, but they didn't do anything. Doing nothing is not an option. Do I think it's too late? Absolutely not. Am I optimistic? You better believe it. Because I think right now that when people look at the fact that they look in the eyes of their children and they realize that it's not our future, it is theirs, and we're going in the wrong direction. When that happens, I think we can do some phenomenal things. We can go and take all of the electrical needs needed for the United States of America. We could produce it onshore. That we could actually take the amount of grain that is stuffed down the throats of animals, and we wouldn't even need those $20 billion worth of oil that's out there. There's some amazing things we can do if we wake up.
I just want to comment real quick. When I feel like that lost hope that he's talking about, I think of that exact, all the time, I think of that exact scene from the Titanic where the people are playing together and they are saying, well, it's a pleasure going down with you fine people. And I think that I would rather go down fighting with fine people like all of you. And I don't know if that, I don't have your energy, but my, you know, so sometimes when I feel pessimistic, I don't know if that thought helps or not, but I just think to myself, I'd still rather than do nothing, I'd rather fight and work really hard amongst fine people.
I think doing nothing is not an option. Let me give you an example. My son-in-law, his father was on an ocean liner, the Lusitania, that was torpedoed off of the coast of Ireland. My son-in-law's father was Alfred Vanderbilt. He never learned how to swim. And he gave his life jacket to a woman to save her life. And he stayed on the deck and went down with the ship. He did something rather than to do nothing. We all can do something. It doesn't mean that one of us here is going to come up with a solution, but if we took 100 people off of the street right here in Ann Arbor and took 10 of the greatest space scientists in the world and we put them in two different rooms and we asked them to come up with a mission to Mars. Do you realize that the 100 people off of the street would have a better plan to get to Mars than the 10 professionals? And they've done this time and time again. And what they find is the professionals are looking at it and saying, well, we need to have this much thrust and we've got to look at the spin of the Earth and all of this. And the people off the street said, well, the first thing we need to do is to aim the right place. Second thing is we need enough power to get there. And for God's sake, we need a bathroom. And invariably, the 10 scientists will be there and they'll have the whole mission planned. And there is not one place in that spacecraft for them to put in the restroom. I'll stick with 100 people and the professionals can go to hell as far as I'm concerned. Are there any other questions?
This is perhaps not so much a question as an observation, but you've kind of challenged the university students in the room to do something. Okay?
True.
And I'm a little older than most, and so is my wife here. But
It's your daughter, isn't it?
That's my daughter.
I like younger women myself. Yeah.
But just a personal experience. We've got a daughter who's a freshman here, a son who's a junior, and an older daughter who's in veterinary medicine at Michigan State.
You know what poor is then.
Yeah, poor is right. And in high school, they took a course in ecology and the environment. And each one would come home after they'd taken this course and said, "Dad, Mom, we don't think it's right to be eating meat from what we've been taught," and basically what you've said here. And so over time, you know, my wife started preparing some vegetarian meals. My daughters started preparing vegetarian meals for us. And at this point in time, two of the three kids are vegetarians. One's a vegan, and Carol's a vegetarian. I'm very close to it. I still steal a hamburger once in a while. But I guess the point is that it really starts with you all and the model that you can set for yourselves and your family. It does rub off. And I think that's where it has to start.
I totally agree that the people that love you the most are the ones that may disagree with you the most, but I guarantee you that they will take a look at what you're doing. The first vegetarian in our family was our granddaughter. She was 14 years old. She came home and said, "Animals are my friends. I will never again eat my friends." My son-in-law was a doctor. He immediately raced out and hired a nutritionist because he thought sure his daughter was going to die of bulimia. But the fact of it is now all three of his daughters are vegetarian. His wife is a vegan. Half of our family, my wife and I have six children, half of our family now are vegetarian. So it happens, whether we like it or not, if we're doing the right thing.
Thanks. I'll just make a quick plug for the Green Party that's happening here all across the country, but we have a chapter here in Ann Arbor too, if anyone's interested in trying to organize a challenge to basically corporate rule. But I want to have a special request that you tell the story about the Duke, and after the Duke died. It's very visual.
How many of you here know who the Duke is? Isn't it amazing? John Wayne, the Duke. Never probably was a bigger meat eater. And when the Duke died, they did an autopsy and they opened him up and they found that he had a hunk of 26 pounds of rotting, putrefying flesh in his large intestine. The Duke died of colon and rectal cancer. He did not ride into the sunset one happy camper. And so when you look at it, cancer, colon and rectal cancer, is one of the largest numbers that we're having in cancer that's out there right now. And most of it is from the rotting, putrefying flesh that is in the large intestine and the colon. So we can make some much better choices. My brother died of Hodgkin's disease. It was not until years later after he died that I found that Hodgkin's disease was caused by 2,4,5-T in Vietnam. They called it Agent Orange. He died from what we were using on the farm. We use it like soda pop with no gloves, no goggles. Why he died from it and I didn't, I have no idea. My sister died of brain cancer, probably from the dairy products that she consumed. So it comes home to each and every one of us. Question.
Couple of questions and comments. Just like I said, I've been vegetarian most of my life since 72, and contrary to what my parents told me, I haven't died
If you want a letter of a testament to that, I'll write it.
Thank you. A question for you. How much of our grain is used for alcohol production in comparison to, say, animal feed? And two, do you think hemp is a viable option for a biodiesel future?
The question is, do I think that hemp is a viable option for biodiesel? The thing that produces the greatest amount of biodiesel of any crop we have is sugarcane. You get almost twice as much sugarcane diesel, biodiesel, than you will get out of corn. I think that hemp is the crop of the future as far as farmers, when we're talking about clothing, paper, things like that. I do not think that hemp is going to be the big crop for biodiesel, but I think there is a fantastic future for it as far as the clothing we wear, rope, lots of things like that. I am a big, big supporter of hemp, and I believe that the future of it is there without smoking it. The amount of grain that is used for alcohol is basically minuscule, because if you are taking grain and making alcohol out of it, what is left after you make alcohol is still viable feedstock. And so you could take all of the grain, the 80% that is fed to animals today, you could make alcohol out of all of it, turn around and feed it, and you would have the same animal protein for the animals with that. But I do believe that biodiesel is going to be the crop of the future, and the concern that I have is this. We right now have about $3 a gallon gas. If we factor in the entire cost of fuel today, it's about $11.30 a gallon. When we're getting up to that point, almost all of the crops that we have are viable alternatives to the oil that is coming out of the Middle East. I think we're going to end up with hungry people in the world, and we, as greedy as we are probably going to make fuel out of it rather than feed the hungry of the world. Today, if each American today did no more than cut back 10% of their animal protein consumption, we could feed every one of the 1.25 billion hungry people in the world today. But remember, that number is going to double by 2050. So these are decisions that have to be made, and they have to be made soon. Are there other questions?
On a selfish level, I just wanted to wonder if you could comment about making the transition from vegetarian to vegan.
Sure. The question is about making the transition. Remember when I did it, I became a vegetarian for a year, and then I became vegan. What I tell people today is I basically say to them, it is not necessary to become a vegan the rest of your life. All you really have to do is make a commitment to go 60 days without eating an animal product. Nothing with a face, liver, or a mother. You don't have to ask somebody's permission. You don't have to do anything other than change your diet, read about the difference between good diets or bad. At the end of 60 days, ask yourself, how do I feel? I will tell you that the first 2 weeks you do it, you're going to feel like crap, because your body is going to start to detox. You get up in the morning, you will stick out your tongue and look in the mirror, and you can take a spoon and scrape the white crud off of your tongue, because your body is starting to detox what's in it, and the skin is the largest detoxing agent in the body. But you take your tongue and stick it out when you first become a vegan, I'm telling you, you're going to look like Frosty the Snowman on what it's going to look like. And you're going to feel terrible, because your body is there saying, wait a minute, you addicted me to fat and protein, and all of a sudden you're changing it. What's the world's going on? I like fat. We are absolutely addicted to fat. Go 60 days, and at the end of 60 days, you will feel the best you've ever felt. You will have more energy than you've ever had. You will end up losing weight. I basically say to people, if they will give me 60 days of a good vegan diet, And at the end of 60 days, they look at it that it didn't work. If they will call me up, I will show up and take them out and buy them a steak dinner. But the fact of it is, you don't have to ask somebody else, how's it working? You can actually tell yourself. But do not expect for the first couple of 3 weeks that it's going to be a real good thing, because you're going to come down off of those addictions that you have in your body. Do you realize that if we take a can of soda, a Coca-Cola, it is nothing more than water and 10 teaspoons of sugar? Do you know why there's only 10 teaspoons of sugar in a can of Coke? Because they can't keep it in suspension if they go more than that, and they don't want people looking at the bottom of the can and seeing the sugar that's there. We have our kids today absolutely addicted. Do you want to know, what do you think is the average consumption of sugar per day per teenager? 37 teaspoons of sugar a day. That is the average sugar consumption of a teenager. You know, if you take a 30-ounce Big Gulp, there are 30 teaspoons of sugar in one drink. And we have many of our kids that are drinking way on more than just one a day. Are there any other questions? Yes.
So you've been talking about good diets and bad diets. And I was wondering if you could just comment a little bit on what would be a bad vegan diet.
The question is, what's a bad vegan diet? Well, let me tell you what a bad vegetarian diet is. Chips and Twinkies are a vegetarian diet. Are they bad? Absolutely. When you're talking about a good diet, what you should be looking at is as much complex carbohydrates as possible. Stay away from refined food. The more refined food in your diet, the more trouble you're going to have with your blood sugar and the whole thing. Complex carbohydrates. If we were to take baked potatoes, and I speak in a lot of high schools, and I basically say to kids, how many of you here eat baked potatoes? And everybody's hands go up. And I said, is that good for your diet? And they said, oh, well, I eat baked potatoes and I get fat. I said, what do you put on your baked potato? Well, hardly anything. A little sour cream, a little bacon, you know, and a little butter. Hardly anything. Well, if we took a baked potato without all of that crap on it and we ate it, it would take 40% of the calories to break down that baked potato. If we took that same potato and made it into French fries, you know what we would have? We would end up with a bucket full of oil that you're putting down your throat. French fries basically would fit a vegan diet. Are they good for you? Absolutely not. Try to find complex carbohydrates. That's why I wrote the book there, so you could tell the difference between a good diet and a bad one, because most of the people that fail on vegetarian or vegan diets fail because they end up with way too many processed foods that are in their diet. And remember, chips and Twinkies are vegetarian, but are they good for you? Absolutely not.
What's on the DVD that you have for sale?
Okay, the DVD that I have back there is a documentary of my life that I spent 3 years of my life and several hundred thousand dollars traveling around the world filming it. And we actually have a contract right now with PBS to show it in 400 stations around the world, around the United States on Earth Day this year. The only problem is we have to get errors and omission insurance, and as of tonight, we don't have it, and that contract is null and void without it. And do you think that there's not a lot of pressure on the insurance industry not to give us E&O insurance so that we can show Americans the best legal slaughterhouse footage in the world? Do you realize it's against the law today to take a camera into a slaughterhouse? We have the best legal slaughterhouse footage in the world. Nobody will see that and ever again wonder where my food comes from. It is well done. It is tastefully done. but it tells you exactly what is happening in factory farms and slaughterhouses that are out there today. It is 59 minutes long. The ones we have here today are 80 minutes long, but it is some of the best footage in the world. It was professionally done. It was accepted by PBS. If we can end up with the E&O insurance, we will actually have it out for 400 stations four times in 3 years.
I just want to ask if you have a website.
The question is, do I have a website? Absolutely. On the back table, you have my business card. My website is madcowboy.com. Everything that I talked about here tonight is in the website. It also has the site from where all of this information comes from that you can actually go and look it up. You think the cattleman wouldn't love to sue me of standing up and saying something that I couldn't substantiate? Every one of the topics we've talked about tonight are in the website. You can go there. You can have my business card. On the back of it happens to have our free electronic newsletter that you can sign up for. And if nothing else, pick up one. It has my phone number and my email address also.
Have you thought about somehow creating the insurance company that can insure the errors and omissions?
Okay, the question is, have I thought about creating an insurance company to provide my own E&O? I've actually gone farther than that. I have a daughter that's a vice president of the largest reinsurance corporation in the world. And the problem is that I cannot start my own insurance company for two reasons. Number one, I have no money. And number two, nobody would accept us as an underwriter. There are only two. There's only two insurance companies in the world that will write E&O insurance on documentaries. One of them's Lloyd's of London, and another one that's out there, and this is not about the cost. We are plumb willing to spend anywhere from $16,000 to $50,000 for the insurance, but we can't even get them to take it as of today. I read my email before I came tonight.
And
yeah, if you could get some insurance company to write an E&O policy by next Tuesday, I'll tell you what, I will bow your feet, I will kiss your feet. I'll probably kiss most anything for it, you know. Are there any other questions? Yes.
What are your thoughts on Tyson getting involved in the organic food market?
The question is, what do I think about Tyson being involved in the organic industry? The same thing I believe of Walmart getting involved in the organic industry. Those are bad folks. And they will lie, cheat, and steal and do anything that they can. And they're really not worried about the organic industry. What they're worried about is they're losing market share to the people that are in the organic industry. Tyson, as far as I'm concerned, those are bad folks, in my opinion. Now, I hope everybody understood that I said, in my opinion. But be careful. There's a lot of these multinational companies right now that are out there waving around a lot of claims, but be very, very careful. The best organic that you can have is that's close enough, get involved in a CSA, consumer-supported agriculture, support the local growers that are here, go to local farmers markets, put your money where your mouth is. Remember, you're voting every time you spend a dollar. It is much better to have those dollars in the pockets of the local growers doing things correctly. And a little bit from each and every one of us will make a phenomenal difference in the future. Any other questions? Yes.
Thanks for coming today. I'm not a vegetarian. I eat quite a bit of meat.
Good.
I came here because my friend did a report on factory farming. I thought it was pretty interesting. And you talked about, you were thinking about opening up an organic farm, but you didn't. The bank wouldn't allow you. But I was thinking about eating more organic meat. Is organic meat better for you than the factory farm meat? Maybe you could explain some of that.
The question is organically grown meat better than the others? Absolutely. When you take meat that has no herbicides, pesticides, hormones, or medication, is it better than the other? Yes. But let's say that we took the best pristine meat in the world, and we look at the standard American diet. The standard American diet has too much protein, too much fat, too much cholesterol, and not enough fiber. If we had the most pristine meat in the world, we have too much fat, too much protein, too much cholesterol, and zero fiber. Is it better than the other stuff? Yes. Is it good for you? Absolutely not. But I will tell you that if you and your the greatest thing that could happen is to have a carnivore that is sitting here, if you would actually look at it and say, I'm willing to take that guy on and give 60 days, you could do 60 days and then ask yourself how you feel. It would be a phenomenal thing that it have the potential to add anywhere from 7 to 15 years of good, healthy life to your life without ever telling anybody why you did it or any other reason. So I would recommend it. If you're going to buy meat, definitely get that that's organic. But don't go with the delusion that it is good for you.
You mentioned animal fat and animal cholesterol, or that's the only
protein.
Cholesterol is bad for us, I understand that, but why is animal protein bad for our...
If we take... How many people in here have taken Chemistry 101? You understand that a protein is an amino acid. Amino acids are extremely necessary in the human body. You take in the protein, they break it down, send it out to the body. They use the protein to rebuild the cells and the whole thing, and it takes the waste product down into the liver and excludes it from the body. The problem is excess protein is an absolute killer to the kidneys. When excess protein is not stored, it is not used, it is sent down to the kidneys. Remember, the kidneys are down there doing the limbo, having a good time, and all of a sudden excess protein comes down. Protein will destroy the kidneys. The kidneys get on the phone, they call the body, and they say, I need something to neutralize this amino acid. What neutralizes an amino acid? A base. The largest source of a base in your body is calcium. You have two large reservoirs of calcium in your body. One is in the blood. If your blood calcium level varies very much, you are going to die. Luckily, the body takes the calcium out of the bone, neutralizes the amino acid, and saves the kidneys. The kidneys are down there wiping their brow and saying, my God, I hope they don't do that again. The next meal, what happens? We need 5% of our protein. We're getting anywhere from 25 to 40%. Osteoporosis is a direct relationship of too much protein in the diet. You need additional protein in your body like a drowning person needs a drink of water. The other thing that is extremely as important is your body takes excess cholesterol and sends it down to the liver to be expelled. Without fiber in your diet to soak up the cholesterol and take it out, your body recycles it. And that's why people on high protein diets with zero fiber end up with extremely high cholesterol. One out of every two people that have a heart attack die from the first one. The average cholesterol reading in America is between 210, 212, and the majority of the people having heart attacks in America have a cholesterol reading above 210. My cholesterol reading went from 300 to 135. The way you get your cholesterol down is, number one, quit putting it in your body, and then you add enough fiber so that when you go to the liver that it soaks it up and it takes it out in the feces in your body. Are there any other questions?
You say that it's possible to add between 7 and 15 years to a person's life, healthy life, by becoming a vegan. Is there any age at which it's too late to heal one's body and to undo the damage previously done?
The question is it ever too late? How many of you have heard of a guy by the name of Dr. Spock? Dr. Spock wrote the books on how to rear children. Dr. Spock was well over 80 in a wheelchair, and a friend of his by the name of Dr. Neil Bernard went and said to him, he said, "Ben, why don't you get the hell out of that wheelchair?" And Ben said, "If I knew how to get out of this wheelchair, I wouldn't. I'd slap you up right alongside the head." And Dr. Neil Bernard said, "Why don't you give up dairy?" And Dr. Spock said, "Well, that isn't going to make any difference." And he said, "What do you got to lose?" Dr. Spock took dairy out of his diet, over 80 years of age, in a wheelchair, and the last 7 years of his life, he got up and walked. The last copy of his book that he put out, he basically said that no child should be on animal protein after they were weaned off of their mother. Is it ever too late? Absolutely not. The most successful thing to fight cancer today happens to be the phytonutrients in vegetables. Not one study has ever shown that there's anything in an animal product that fights cancer. And there are study after study that shows that they are in plant products. So is it ever too late? Absolutely not. I will be at the back. I will be more than happy to sign books for anybody that's there. The books are $13. The videos are $20. I'd be more than happy to sign them. Pick up one of my business cards so that you can come to my website and sign up for the free electronic newsletter. I want to thank you and the organizers for putting together this event. This is one of the great universities in the world. I expect to see great things from this group. If we're going to win, it's going to take people like you here to come up with the solutions. Thank you very much.